let's get Tom in here. We got a great big cornucopia of news spilling out over the wicker. Hey!
Cornucopia, eh?
Cornucopia of news! I love corn. I know you do. I saw you. I saw what you left behind the other day. What time is it right now, Andrew?
Time for you to apologize.
I'd like to apologize for anything I might have said yesterday.
It's also time for a shout-out.
Shout-out, that's right. This is how we get listeners. We call one out, one a day. Matt Craig, whose brother listens to the show, and Matt Craig, who has no internet, has no television, hasn't watched anything on television in 20 years, drives a truck, and refuses to listen to the radio.
But he has two first names.
Matt Craig. Huge Harley guy. Looks like a, not a refrigerator, but a box that the refrigerator would come in. But heavily tattooed.
And bearded.
And very bearded. Nice guy.
I'm sure.
And now he's listening. We get one. And by the way, if you want to see what he looks like, we put his picture up. This is one more way to shame the listener and get one more listen every single day.
But how is he listening if he doesn't have any access?
No. He drives a truck, so he's got a radio.
But he does.
So now he has it on.
All right.
So now that's how we get him.
Right. Hello, there? Matt.
There we go. Thank you. All right, let's see. Tiny house. Women's tiny house. So these are known as S-Shacks. In rundown villages that the city is building.
They're not run down. Not yet.
They will be. They wanted to build 1,000 of them. How many have they built so far? They wanted to build 1,000 in 1 year. What do they have now?
What are you talking about? 1,000? I never heard that. Jenny Durkin
Danny West
promised
needs piece,
three
yeah.
more.
Yeah, Danny Westney did a whole thing on it. That remember when the city said they wanted to build 1,000 tiny houses for temporary to get them off the street? Well, how's it been since the years gone by? This was Danny's piece.
Okay.
They built 28. They originally wanted to build 1,000. So how many do they have?
Okay, so in terms of the villages, they're eight. They've just opening today the eighth tiny village.
Eighth tiny village.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they wanted to do 1,000 tiny S-Shacks. They have.
Okay, now when you say they, though, we just got to make clear. Jenny Durkin's only been in power for, half a year? So she was not the one who said 1,000, was she?
No, this was prior to.
Okay.
The proposal was to spread 1,000 tiny houses, 96 square foot installation huts built by volunteers. This was originally the idea that they come
originally.
Up with. We need to do something fast. This is the thing they pushed.
So Jenny Durkin has proposed since she became mayor that three, and this is the first of the three, tiny villages, not just individual homes.
It was Sally Bagshaw that came up with the idea of doing 1,000. Yeah. So the new S-Shacks go into play at Whittier Heights neighborhood. Where is that, Tom, for people like Matt Craig not knowing where Whittier Heights is?
It's in North Seattle, sort of between Ballard and Greenwood.
So the city learns as they go. So they put one there in Licton Springs, and it turned the crime rate increased by 100%. Then they put another one in. They had another one, Othello. What have they decided to do in this one that's going to stop crime from just going crazy in the neighborhoods?
Because of the problems at Licton Springs, they now, in addition to announcing a new housing situation that's women only and have a 24-hour security there, they've decided to do something similar. They're installing more security lights. They're going to keep security cameras.
Well, I think Deborah Horn from Cairo 7 has this, too. You want to hear from her?
Even better.
They say we don't have enough women on this show.
Sharon Lee, the founder and executive director of the Low Income Housing Institute, showed us the latest tiny village community, this one only for women who have been living on the streets.
And if you go inside, you will see that it has a bed, nice cushy mattress.
Lehigh, as she calls her agency, oversees all eight tiny house villages spread across Seattle.
Georgetown, Othello, West Seattle, North Lake, Licton Springs.
Indeed, the village in Licton Springs has been an unwelcome addition to that North Seattle neighborhood. Neighbors' complaints about an uptick in crime were borne out by stats we got from Seattle police in late spring.
Uptick?
In 1 year, crime in Licton Springs is up more than 100%.
Uptick?
Year to date?
Come on, that's not an uptick. That's an explosion.
As you've often pointed out, a percent doesn't mean anything. It could have gone from 1 to 2, and that would be 100%.
That's true.
It was up 80%. This, as crime overall in the North Precinct dropped 7%. And those living in the village have experienced crime, too. In April, a registered sex offender broke in and assaulted his ex-girlfriend. He was sentenced to 60 days in jail.
That's one of the reasons we set up a village for women only.
So this should help address that at least.
Absolutely. This will be safe because we're going to have full-time staff 24 hours a day here.
In the Licton Springs Action Report, Lee and her staff cited several challenges. Its location on Aurora Avenue, long a haven for drugs, prostitution, and rough sleeping. Not enough resources nor funding from the city of Seattle. Moreover, the villagers are sometimes blamed for actions of those who happen to be camping nearby.
So you think they're getting a bum rap?
Well, we think that it can be improved. We can definitely improve how things are happening at Licton Springs, and we are.
Okay, yeah, it attracts a bunch of people. So you have the people in the S Shacks, and then you have the people out in T-Town. That's Tarp Town. So Tarp Town and S Shack villages.
Be careful, Tacomans may not be happy with you.
Okay, then just Tarp Town. Okay. Yeah. Don't call them tiny villages.
They are. That's what they are.
That makes it cute, right? And let's put some potted plants out front. Let's bring the paper and let them take pictures of
they
it.
Can
but then
be.
Let's go back. Let's go back in 6 months from now and we'll see how it looks.
That's right.
Yeah.
My guess is, and this is just entirely a hunch, that the women's one, this newest one, is going to look better than the others.
Okay. Tom, I make more than $500,000 a year. You know how crappy my yard looks? Do you know how crappy my yard looks?
No, I do not, John.
I got six broken down cars out front, right? The grass is not watered. The front light on the house is bent to one side. You can see the wires.
So you must be living in an S mansion.
I do. It's not a mansion. It's a crap house in Sammamish. My point is that people.
I didn't think there were such things allowed in Sammamish.
Well, here's what it is. My neighbors, we are spread out. We're on an acre, about an acre and a half. Neighbors about an acre away. So we don't see. But when you live in a community, I lived in a super duper rich house next on the lake, my neighbor's house was 15 feet away. And if my grass wasn't cut, I got the stink eye from those guys. In fact, one time I accidentally threw down too much fertilizer and it burnt a hole, like it burnt a streak in the grass. My neighbor came over without my permission and fixed it.
Okay. I'm not sure where we're going.
My point is people assimilate to their environment, Tom. People assimilate to an environment. So as soon as your one neighbor and your one S shack leaves their crap out front, the stolen shopping cart, then you go, well, I guess it's okay to leave my cart out front, right? But the idea of everybody taking care of all of their stuff, it goes back to the same thing. If it's temporary, how long is it temporary? And do you eventually force them out and force them to take responsibility for their illness by forcing them to get into some sort of treatment?
Yes.
Rather than housing them here, show me you get to spend 6 months in here and then you get treatment or you agree to treatment. Like we found when the jungle, 75% of the people that were in the jungle refused any sort of treatment. So the same thing, if you don't do the treatment, and within 6 months, then we move you out and you lose your S-shack, and we move somebody else in that's willing to be able to accept the treatment to have a better life. Because we all have to agree, living in a doghouse is not an acceptable way to live, correct?
But it might be an improvement over living in a tent on the sidewalk in a park.
Right.
So if you see it as a stepping stone, you're right. I don't know what the mechanism is to determine how long someone is allowed to stay there without encouraging them to improve their life.
Deborah Horn, find out how long does somebody stay in one of these S shacks until you force them to make a decision to make their life better? Or do we just let them stay in a doghouse? Real fast, I looked up, can you force somebody? Where is involuntary treatment provided? So in 1998 in New York City, a crazy guy that had spent time in and out of loony bins, excuse the vernacular, pushed a woman in front of a subway named Kendra, killing her instantly. The family was then called, and it's Elliot Spitzer, I think client number 67 or something like that, then called Kendra's family and said, we'd like to create a bill called the Kendra Law that would protect citizens and would create involuntary medical treatment for people that are not taking their medicines and are out on the street endangering other people's lives. It kind of stalled for a while, and then another guy got pushed in front of a train. Luckily, he survived, and when he came out of the hospital, Tom, he had on a T-shirt that said Kendra's Law. And that started this whole thing of, hey, maybe we should do something. So in New York, they set this law up that basically says if you refuse services, someone can take you. The state takes you and puts you in this treatment and make sure that you're getting help. And they release you and then they stay with you and then they bring you back in again. If you're not staying up on your meds, they do everything they can to get you back up on your feet so that you're not mentally ill and you don't have this sickness that you're dealing with. Every 5 years, they have to vote to extend it. It's back in committee as to whether or not they're going to extend this idea. Seattle should do the same thing. Step in. Okay, you're out of your tarp. Now you're here in this doghouse. Now here's what we're going to ask you to do. You have drugs and alcohol problem? Here's the counselor. Not voluntary. Not, hey, do you want to meet with a counselor? But this is the way it's going to work. Here's the deal. In order to have this, you're going to have to do this and this. And we'd like to be able to wean you off of your heroin. Not give them a choice. Do you want to get off of heroin? No, there is no choice. The person is sick. They're not making good decisions. You take them and you say to them, here's this. You're dry. You're warm. You're safe. Now we're going to fix you. And you take that money and pour it towards helping these people with these illnesses. That's what I'm saying. Not a heartless individual who has just wants to call it an S shack. But what is the program? It's not good enough to move them off the street and into a doghouse.
Okay. So the thing is, John, I mean, you're raising an issue that has all sorts of complicating factors, and as a libertarian, I'm surprised you'd be that comfortable with society determining involuntary commitment. There are all sorts of problems about that in terms of one's own freedom that you always like to wrap the flag around in. I get that.
What persons, but you lose your freedom, Tom, when you are no longer responsible for making decisions that could affect somebody else.
How do you gauge that? How many people are crazy and need involuntary commitment?
How many people are crazy and voluntary commitment? And how many people are crazy? They say at least 40%. This is from the New York numbers. 40% of those people that are on the street are mentally ill to the point of diagnosed schizophrenia. How many of them are violent? They say only about 4%. But it doesn't matter. 4% of a huge number is still a big number. So the thing is that, you have freedom, but at a certain point, you're not making rational choice decisions. If you want to roll around in your own vomit and feces and inject drugs into your arm and then break into your neighbor's house, right?
But that can be defended. You know, involuntary commitment is very tricky, and I think a lot of us would be in favor of more of that if we could figure out a fair way to determine that. But when you're talking about rolling around in your own feces, those kinds of things, those can be administered because of their public health issues, and they can be addressed
on that score. It's behavioral, Tom. It's behavioral. It's not a matter of giving a person a clean pair of pants. The person is sick.
Let's see where we agree.
If it is
a rat-infested place, obviously that's a public health issue, and you can intervene in public health issues.
I got that.
But that's a little different than somebody who's just, you know, sitting against a tree drooling all the time. Maybe he's mentally ill or maybe he's not. But how you determine who's involuntarily committed and who isn't, it just raises some interesting civil liberties issues.
I understand.
It's not quite as cut and dry as you portray.
Well, let's see where we vary in opinion. A person is shooting heroin into their arms. Is it a sickness?
Yes.
Okay.
But
so the person is sick.
A choice.
It's a choice.
I'm afraid so.
Interesting. All right. So it's a choice. They can or they can't take it. Yes or no.
It's an addiction. So the question is, when you first take it, I think it's a choice. When you first take a heroin, and then it becomes an addiction. And at what point does the choice that kicked off the addiction, you know, give way to the fact that now it's just an illness?
Well, let's assume that a person goes from a choice to an addiction, and let's say an addiction is the point that you can no longer make a choice, that the addiction makes the choice for you, which is get high, get high, get high. So at that point, do we agree that the person is no longer able to take care of themselves?
Well, I've been told, and I don't know this from personal experience, but I've been told that you can actually do heroin and function.
I've heard that too.
So in that case, I don't know if that's considered an addiction or not. To me, anybody who's taking heroin's got to be addicted. Mm-hmm. And if you're addicted, it seems like it would be hard to carry on your life. But I've been told that some people do on a regular basis and have functioning lives.
Fine. How about the people that are shooting up and homeless? Are they making good choices?
Well, I'm not the person to decide that.
Okay.
But if you're asking me personally if that was my family
member, talk radio.
I'd say no.
Okay, good. All right. There we go. Thank you, Tom.
I think smokers aren't making good choices.
It doesn't
either.
Matter. That's not affecting. I don't have to pay for them necessarily. It's a small percentage. But luckily, they'll die sooner than later. So the thing is, with the heroin thing, we assume that the person's not making good choices. We assume they're sick. So who steps in and helps them? The answer is society steps in. Society doesn't help them by putting them in a doghouse. That is not helping them.
Okay,
it gets them out of the rain,
yes,
but it's not helping the problem.
Well, the idea is in these village homes, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get them back up on their feet, and this is the first step. We did, John, we've been talking about this since the show started five years ago.
Thank God for homelessness.
And the idea here is that what the thing that seemed most effective was to get people into homes before treatment. If they're not in homes and they're going through some kind of treatment of their addiction or their mental illness, but they're still living in,
Tarp towns. Thank you.
Then the problem is that is not a solution. So the idea is maybe these tiny villages could be that first step up where you can lock yourself, lock your belongings in a safer place.
Okay. And then here's the last part, and then we'll get off this subject. I'm so tired of it. Then to somebody, Stacy, hi. Welcome to S-Town. I just want to let you know that here's the way this works. You're going to have to clean up out front. That's one of the rules we have here. Okay. Plus, also, a counselor is going to be coming by and talking about drug and alcohol.
Yes, I think they do that.
This is where it gets tough love.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to show up at 10 o'clock. If you miss 3 days at the 10 o'clock call, we're going to have to ask you to pack up and leave because we need you to start taking responsibility for your life. Now, if you're unable to make those 10 o'clocks, you tell us right now. And then from there, we'll get you out of here and we're going to send you somewhere else where we now work with your drug and alcohol problems so you can at least be responsible enough to show up at 10 o'clock in the morning to a meeting.
The problem is showing up at 10 o'clock may be harder for people to be able to do than a lot of other things where we can intervene and help them as well.
Right.
The problem is we're trying to call them up on the way we run our lives.
It's called society. It's called society.
Right.
Do you want to be outside of society and have society pay for your life?
Where do you go? If they're in one of these homes, these small, tiny villages,
Doghouses.
The idea is that is going to help them. If we kick them out, how is it going to?
No.
How is that going to help them?
How are you helping them? You're getting them out of the rain. But Tom, you're not fixing the problem.
Step. No,
you're not fixing the problem.
No, but it's the first step. If it takes three steps, you give them the first step, and you hope to get them on the second step.
So you're saying there's a second and third step?
Yeah.
Where is it?
The idea,
Deborah
is
Horn. Where is the second and third step?
That's her story. Was about the fact that this one in Licton Springs is having trouble. They're opening a new one in Whittier,
right?
And the way they're fixing things in Licton Springs is already being put in place in Whittier. That's
right.
The basic thrust of her story. She can't do everything. She can't solve the homeless problem like we can. We have more time on radio.
That's what I want to know.
Yes.
What's the next step? Got them out of there. Put them in a doghouse.
Yes.
Then where do they go? All right. We have so many other stories we didn't get to.
Yeah, son of a gun.
Did we solve the homeless problem?
We're getting there.
There we go. That's the right attitude. We'll come right back to Tom and Curly Show. We'll talk about the epidemic of loneliness. There's two professions you shouldn't go into if you think you might be prone to being lonely and depressed.
Okay.
Right back.
Be prepared.
Here we go with the Tom and Curly Show, brought to you by Keel Mortgage. Keel Mortgage proud to bring you the Tom and Curly Show, 1-888-778-KIEL. Thanks, Keel Mortgage. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. If you have a friend that doesn't listen to the show, you want to turn them on to us so you can stop going, hey, I heard Tom said this crazy-ass thing, and then Curly was so brilliant, he responded with this, and Tom was like, what? I mean, if that's what
I'm glad you're using your dumb voice.
If that's the way you have to spend most of your day, then please, it's important that you have your friends listen to the show. And if you want, we'll do a call out for them. All right?
Well.
Something new. All right? You like that idea, Hosty Ravel?
Oh, baby!
I agree. All right. Right at mynorthwest.com, text as well at 98973. Where's that weirdo thing I'm supposed to also tell them about? You want to do that now? Let's get this out of the way. Yeah. See, they've written it any better. I'm reading as written.
Oh, you are.
As
are
a
you?
Dyslexic.
Yes, that's right. Stand on your head, too.
I'm going to read everything.
Yeah, okay.
Mailbag contest, one time per day in conjunction with normal request for letters.
Gotcha.
There's a new way to write to us. Just go to the mailbag section of the Tom and Curly Facebook page. When you submit your letters, there you'll be entered into a drawing for $100 gift card from Doug's Linwood Mazda.
Ah, Doug's Linwood Mazda. Now, there's a familiar sponsor.
That's nice.
Here we go. Thank you. Epic of the epidemic of loneliness. I saw the story the other day. I sent it to Jacob. He liked it.
Yeah.
We always like counterintuitive stories.
Yes.
And this certainly falls into the category of counterintuitive. Those people that work, that are lonely, you would not expect this particular profession or these professions to have lonely people in it.
The loneliest professions by far, according to a new study, are lawyers and doctors.
Yes,
weird. That is kind of counterintuitive because lawyers and doctors are seen as, in a lot of ways, the cream of the crop, you know, in society. And right behind them, again, more of the cream of the crop types, engineering and science are also fields that are, as they say, there's an epidemic of loneliness. And it has nothing to do with their brains. It has nothing to do with their social abilities vis-a-vis other professions. It has to do with the nature of their profession tends to be isolating.
Yeah.
And because of that, they don't have social support workplaces that allow them to prosper. They start off with an example of somebody who is a clinical psychologist, and she works primarily with she does therapy sessions with kids. And by law or professional standards, she can't talk about any of the issues that she's dealing with these kids, with other people, with other professionals. So she feels really isolated, and just that's a lot of psychological burden that she has to carry on herself. And the thing about lawyers, for instance, you do a lot of legal work, which is just you and the books and trying to figure things out. There's not a kind of camaraderie among a lot of lawyers because they're case specific. At least that's what the argument is here. Occupations that involve high degrees of social interaction, however, they say are the opposite end of the spectrum. Loneliness is not an issue at all. And what are those professions? Social work, marketing, and sales. They have no problem with isolation because their whole interaction with people is the basis of their job. And so because of that, they say that we have to keep in mind when you're becoming a lawyer and becoming even a PhD, they say, and or a doctor, you're spending a lot of time in kind of a grad school situation, like a medical school situation, which they say tends to be isolating because it's so bookish. It's so book oriented. It appeals best to introverts. And if you're an introvert, a highly educated introvert who doesn't have a social safety net in your profession that you can lean on, then you're going to be isolated and bored.
Well, this will add even more to it, Tom. Okay. Physicians are even more likely to kill themselves. The suicide rate is nearly 100% above average.
Wow. See, that goes against, they said, what this does demonstrate is that the compensation of salary, because lawyers and doctors tend to make more than your average Joe, is, you know, may be reasons why they go into professions, but it's something that they need to look out for. And their suggestion here is if you are dealing with that, you've got the money, you should be doing other side jobs, in effect. And if it's not a job, a hobby, you know, work with your church or with some kind of social group, a political group, so that you have interaction with people that'll supply you with a kind of psychological safety net.
And although Shakespeare would be okay with this, lawyers are 1.3 times more likely to commit suicide. And real estate agents are under them, and then hand molders, people that work with clay. I guess it's the story that we had always heard, that dentists were number one as far as – dentists are 1.6 times more likely to commit suicide.
What I don't understand is that it seems to me, at least with doctors, don't they interact with patients all the time. And if they're like surgeons, they'd interact with nurses. I'm just surprised that it's not considered – maybe doctors in general – are too busy and too isolated to hang out with other doctors, perhaps, or
just dealing with sick people all the time. And the number one profession that people kill themselves, ready? Marine engineers are 1.8 times more likely to commit suicide. You ever met a marine engineer?
No.
Well, see, there it goes to show you.
So marine as in, like, working underwater, like engineering underwater kinds of things?
I'm going to put the word marine and engineer together and assume they're working underwater.
Okay, good.
Or they got something, at some point they will be underwater.
Or do they work on aquariums?
There's a picture of a guy turning a big metal handle.
Yeah,
Tom.
In black and white. they work in submarines. Well, that is going to be isolating.
There you go.
So anyway, it's something to keep in mind. And
why did you ask me in the pre-show meeting if I'm lonely? Okay. That was awkward.
Because what's interesting about this for me is that you pride yourself on being an independent operator, that you don't owe any loyalty to Cairo Radio or any other job because you're your own man and you're going to just. And yet, can't think of anybody more sociable in the newsroom. You feed off that kind of interaction with people in the newsroom constantly. And so I was just wondering if you felt lonely because your stance toward your commitment to your job is independent of any kind of sort of natural social commitment that a lot of the rest of us feel. And yet you seem very
social. What social commitment do you feel?
I feel some loyalty to Cairo, even though I know, and you think that's
fun. Could fire us tomorrow.
I know they could, but they haven't.
So what? Why have loyalty?
Because they're loyalty to me.
No, because we deliver. Listen, yes, people listen to this crap, and they listen to this, and advertisers buy it. But Cairo, Bonneville, they don't know us.
Yes, they do.
No, they
don't.
The
people that work, people here know us. And they would know that when they do something bad to us, they should at least feel bad when they fire
They fired us. Me, and then they ran a PSA explaining that we're sorry the show sucks so bad.
See, because they also care about their listeners. They're a very caring company.
I'm not bitter about being fired. I don't care. They brought me back.
That's right.
Okay. But there should be no... This is the problem. If you believe you have a relationship with your employer, you're hoodwinked into believing, oh, we're part of the family.
No, I know. I understand your stance.
Yeah.
And yet, so then you should be very independent and not need anybody else. And yet, I think you, and this, I don't mean need in a desperation kind of way, but you need the social interaction. You are always flitting around from various
desks. Hold on a second.
You go,
Andrew.
Because you
flitting
crave,
around?
Yes, because you crave social interaction. Basically, you need an audience is what I'm trying to say. But still, you are you're buzzing around everybody's desk, and that's because you need that social interaction. And it's a good thing because
you're the one talking. Otherwise, I'm going to other people's desks because you're so busy talking about movies that no one's going to watch. I got to get out of here.
I don't have to leave my desk because my voice is so loud you can hear me all the way across the newsroom.
That is true.
No, but I mean, I do think that you need that social interaction, and you get it, even though you claim that you could walk away from this job tomorrow and it wouldn't give you any pause.
Right, I would find some other place to quote unquote perform.
Yes.
But going from desk to desk is a form of performance.
Like, exactly.
Okay,
no,
Rachel Bell and I perform, right?
That's
we goof around and play different characters all the time.
Yes,
to,
it's
to bother
very highly
you.
Entertaining.
Oh,
yeah,
good,
to bother
okay.
me. No, I just got to figure out a way how to secretly record that and monetize it.
Like the other day, we were playing the two people. That
yes.
We, yeah. Oh, that was annoying. All right. Did we solve any problems?
I don't know. I'm not lonely anymore.
Marine engineers, hang on through this commercial break. We'll come right back. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Quick, before they fire me. Bring somebody in here for Tom to work with. Right at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Big part of the show. You also get a chance to be letter of the day. An unusual medical training tool that started out as a childish prank. These two guys decided they would do something. They would stick it in the radiator that would then cause stink to go down into the gymnasium where guys were playing basketball. Was that the original idea?
Yes. This is one of the two guys that we're about to talk about who are marketing this now. Uh-huh. When he was in high school, he did this as a prank.
Okay.
He tried to. I don't know how much. Do we have sound here? I don't want to step
on
the
sound.
Well, I
got him talking about what their product smells like. So let's get the backstory.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a bunch of people playing basketball down in the gym. So this guy says, hey, this would be kind of fun to make some so stinky that it forces them all out of the gym. So he's mixing different chemicals together or something like that?
He comes up with some kind of concoction to smell like the worst smell you can possibly imagine.
And they describe, well, I'll let him describe it. And he tries it, and he doesn't perfect it, but he gets close to it, throws it down into the gym. It's awful. It's like a high school prank.
It clears the gym.
Clears the gym. Okay. Then he realizes, hey, I'm on to something.
Yeah, but not for 20 years.
But that's the great thing about something like this.
It's a slowly evolving joke.
It reminds me of the guy that used to have to make dentures at night. And he was making dentures, and as a joke, he used to make crazy dentures.
Okay.
And then he invented Billy Bob teeth. Remember Billy Bob teeth?
Yeah.
He was an actual dentist who built dentures late at night when no one was around. And then he started making crazy ones, and then he ended up making millions and millions of dollars. Okay, same sort of thing. Guy comes up with a kooky idea, and next thing you know...
We make the world's best stink product. Liquid Ass is a stinky liquid that smells like butt crack with hints of dead animal.
Mm-hmm. They describe it as it would be like smelling a plumber's rear end after 3 days of work and no shower.
Yes.
Okay. They said they started using the product. Has changed over the time. Oh, good.
We're making a product specifically for pranks at first, but then we start getting calls from military people. Stu ordered from us, and I've never met Stu. It sounds like he's got a pretty neat business, and he came up with the idea to use it for triage. But the fact is that it goes from prank product to medical field is sort of a jump. Now we have a product out there that's helping military training, which is it's great, you know.
Okay, hopefully you're not eating. Tom, explain to everybody how it is used.
So the reason, what's significant about this is obviously it has this, there's a big market for pranks. And now as adults and professionals, they decide to market it as that. But what it does is it does the medical staffs at various hospitals and medical and military training operations say that it most accurately captures the smells that come from our bowels. And so they have so many patients that are in trouble in the hospital. They soil themselves.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to be trained to deal with that smell instead of throwing up in the face of the patient. But they also use it for the military because you have to be able to do, you know, battleground wounds and responds to those. And they have some of the worst, you know, worst injuries, the worst smells. And you have to be a professional and keep focus. And this helps train them.
Called ass crack?
No, it's called liquid ass.